Good morning. So if you woke up today not obsessing about anyone, congratulations, you're staying on freedom. So welcome. So before we really, really begin, we got a couple of instructions. If we can get the slideshow to cooperate. There we go. So we will have two sessions, each lasting about 1.5 hours. Please wait until the breaks to smoke or use the restroom. Of course, if you're at home, my only suggestion is to make sure your video is off when you do those things. Please turn off cell phones unless you're using it to listen to us. We will be using only Al-Anon conference-approved literature, Paths to Recovery, and How Al-Anon Works for the Families and Friends of Alcoholics. Al-Anon has no prescribed way of taking the steps. Today, we will show you one way as described in our literature. Of course, we do not speak for the Al-Anon family groups. This workshop has been the effort of many people over a long period of time. I think over 10 years? Mm-hmm. Over 10 years. So we're grateful to be your leaders today. We're not here to tell you that you are doing anything wrong. Our hope is that you can find something here to help you in your recovery and your 12-step work. Feel free to take and use anything you may find helpful, and we'll show you how it is all available online at the end of the workshop. Also, this is our very first time on Zoom. Super exciting. I don't know how many people showed up. How many people are online with us? I know that we have friends in India and Scotland and the UK and just all over the world. We're so glad that you could join us today. 49. Seven tradition. Every Al-Anon group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. We'll have a basket here for the people that are here. Those of you online, just enjoy. All right, you want to read that?
You need to keep an open mind. There is no other way.
So with that, we need to take a moment of silence to pray for the three necessities of recovery, which are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. So let's take that moment now. And again, welcome to the Let It Begin With Me workshop. It's worldwide. It's been presented all over. And right now we're in St. Pete and on Zoom. So did anyone else feel that way when they first came into Al-Anon, that I will survive? And of course, our whole point is to have fun. Recovery should be fun. If it's not, I think we're doing something wrong. All right. How do I?
So press the screen share button and then click on.
All right. And of course, it's wonderful that we get to see people having fun online. This is the first time we've had video for the online. All right. So good morning and welcome. My name is Iris. I'm grateful to be one of your hosts for today. I was very fortunate to grow up in recovery. I did 11 years of Alateen, and I've been back in Al-Anon now for over 6 years, almost seven. And I don't share that to impress you. I simply share it to impress upon you that I might have some experience with this, and I'm not just making all of this up. And my co-chair today is my dad.
Hi, I'm Bill, and I've been an active Al-Anon member since 1979.
Hi, Bill.
So during this workshop, we're just going to be reading literature to you and sharing our experience and following the directions. Oh. All right, and this is from How Al-Anon Works.
Al-Anon's 12 steps show us the way. Through the steps, we can feel that empty place within us where loneliness and pain reside. We come alive in a way we never experienced before. We realize that we belong and that we are loved. The following is a brief overview of this remarkable path to spiritual development and personal growth. That's from How Al-Anon Works, page 44. All the citations will be at the top of the page.
And again, we'll show you how to access all of this at the end of the presentation. So let's start with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And we're just going to jump right into it with step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable.
Many of us come to Al-Anon filled with despair and hopelessness. Some of us come to find out how to get another person sober. Others grew up in alcoholic homes or left alcoholic partners and no longer live with active drinking. Though we may not have labeled it this way, we came to Al-Anon because our lives are unmanageable. We come looking for relief.
Did anyone else come here looking for relief?
Yes.
So let's show you how to get some relief today from Paths to Recovery.
Once we acknowledge that someone else's drinking has affected our lives, we may want to blame everything on the drinking. Yet we're sure there must be something more we can say or do that will convince the alcoholic to stop drinking, thus resolving our problems. We have no idea that we're as powerless over alcohol as the alcoholic is. Admitting our powerlessness may be very difficult for us. After all, we're the competent ones who held the family, the job, or the world together, while the alcoholics in our lives created chaos. How can it be that we, the responsible ones, are powerless? In Al-Anon, we come to understand that our lives may be unmanageable because we're trying to control the people and situations in our lives. It can be hard to conceive that our well-meaning efforts have been part of the problem, but by the time we reach Al-Anon, we're finally ready to try something, anything new.
So who's here and ready to try something new?
Yay!
Woo!
In order to take the first step and admit our powerlessness over alcoholism, we need first to understand and accept that alcoholism is a disease. One symptom is an uncontrollable desire to drink. As long as an alcoholic continues to drink, that desire will increase. The only way to arrest the disease is total abstinence. The only way to arrest the disease is total abstinence. Our experience shows we cannot force someone to stop drinking. This is an individual choice of the alcoholic. Alcoholism not only exists inside the body of the alcoholic, but is a disease of relationships as well. Many of the symptoms of alcoholism are in the behavior of the alcoholic. The people who are involved with the alcoholic react to this behavior. They try to control it, make up for it, or hide it. They eventually blame themselves for it and are hurt by it. Eventually, they become emotionally disturbed themselves.
So eventually they become emotionally disturbed themselves. So here's the way I love to explain this. So in AA, when they talk about the disease of alcoholism, it's threefold. It's mental, physical, and spiritual. And what happens for the alcoholic is when they drink, they experience this phenomenon of craving. And then they drink and drink and drink and drink and drink and drink and drink compulsively until some greater force intervenes. And that greater force can be anything. For some, it can be as simple as they got to get up and go to work in the morning. For others, it could be, you know, they run out of booze, run out of money, end up in jail, they die. You know, some greater force intervenes that stops the drinking. But what happens is even once they have stopped for any period of time, the obsession comes in and the mind says it'll be okay to have just one, you know, it'll be different this time. And the mind will obsess and obsess and obsess until the alcoholic compulsively picks up the first drink again. And that cycle continues until some greater force intervenes. And in 12-step recovery, they remove the obsession and they recover. Now, for me, as someone who qualifies for Al-Anon, my disease looks very similar. I obsess over him. Where is he going? What is he doing? Why isn't he doing this? He should be doing that. He shouldn't be doing this. Who is he screwing over next? And on and on and on and on. You know, I'm having conversations with him when he's not here. you know, practicing the script, usually in the shower. And then when he comes back, you know, compulsively against my will, against any little voice of sanity that may or may not be there, I'm asking questions I really don't want answers to, but I ask him anyways because I'm crazy. I'm emotionally disturbed, you know, and the moment he comes home, I'm going to accost the bastard and demand, you know, he change. Can anyone else relate? So that's the obsession and the compulsion. You know, unfortunately, with the 12 steps, we're going to show you how to remove the obsession so we no longer have to compulsively react. And we'll talk about that a little later. You want to tell your story about Texas Tech?
After the next slide.
All right, one more slide. Paths to recovery.
In Al-Anon meetings, we hear the three C's describing our powerlessness over alcoholism. We didn't cause it, can't cure it, and can't control it. With this first step, we admit that we did not cause, cannot control, and cannot cure the alcoholic, the disease of alcoholism, or the fact that we have been affected by this disease. We are powerless over alcohol and its effects on us. By ourselves, we can do nothing to overcome the effects of this disease. In fact, our attempts to exert power over alcohol have made our lives unmanageable. This is the significant difference between what we do here and every other treatment modality out there. Everything else out there attempts to empower people in one form or another. In the 12-step programs in Al-Anon, we start out with the premise that we cannot be empowered because by ourselves we are powerless. The story I like to tell, I've got a sponsee who is in an addiction studies program at Texas Tech. And since it's an addiction studies program, there's a lot of people in there that are recovering. And one of the things that they can do now, well, for the last several years, is they can wire up your skull and they can see the brain activity. There's, they can actually see the patterns of brain activity. So they take one of the guys in the program who happens to be a crackhead. They wire him up. Could have been an alcoholic, but he was a crackhead. They wire him up. They show him a picture of some crack. Certain areas in his brain lit up like a Christmas tree. Okay, well, that's kind of to be expected. But then they took his wife. They wired her up, showed her a picture of him. The exact same areas of her brain lit up. In other words, the alcoholic is addicted to alcohol. The addict is addicted to drugs. As an Al-Anon, I'm addicted to the alcoholic. And while it may not have started that way, when it reaches the point where the brain lights up, the brain activity, it has now become organic. And that's why it is so difficult for us to stop doing the things that we're doing. With the alcoholic, it's one more drink. With the Al-Anon, it's, I'm going to say one more thing. That'll do it. We have to admit that nothing we do or don't do can control another person's drinking. So much for enabling. You can't enable and be powerless. Take your pick. It's either one or the other. You know, the Al-Anon program says we're powerless.
So for those of you that are ready to take step one, please stand up. Or if you're at home, you know, you can type it in the chat. So, do you admit that you are powerless over alcohol, the alcoholic, or alcoholism, and that your life has become unmanageable?
Yes or no?
Yes.
So for everyone that just said yes, congratulations. According to the literature, you just took step one. And this is what happens as a result of having done step one, from past to recovery.
By letting go of the illusion of control, it was only an illusion? By letting go of the illusion of control over other people, their actions, and their addiction to alcohol, we find an enormous burden is lifted, and we begin to discover the freedom and the power we do possess, the power to define and live our own lives.
Sounds pretty good, right?
Step one reminds us of our proper relationship with others. We are powerless over them. It places us in correct relationship with ourselves. When we try to control others, we lose the ability to manage our own lives. Step one is the true beginning of our path to recovery.
So congratulations on taking that first step in your path to recovery. And moving on to step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. From how Al-Anon works.
Al-Anon is not a religious program, but it is a spiritual one. Our 12 steps speak of a power greater than ourselves and a God of our understanding. We seem to have a mouse here in the room. Al-A-Mouse.
It's a church mouse.
He's sick. Okay. Deep breath. We may choose any higher power or concept of God we wish, traditional or contemporary, deity or force of nature. The choice is ours. Our God is personal, adaptable to our changing beliefs and growing spirituality. The key is in our newfound willingness to surrender our lives to God.
Now, I growing up in the program and watching people, I've seen people really struggle with this step. They have this idea that at this point, I need to define and understand what God is. And in my experience, I did not come to have any concept or understanding of my higher power until step 11. In fact, I didn't really come to fully believe in my higher power until I experienced something in step 7. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. Let's talk about sanity.
In step one, we learned that we didn't cause the disease of alcoholism. We couldn't control it or cure it. Step two offers us an option, sanity.
And my favorite definition of sanity is that I no longer have to act on my first impulse. You know, if my first impulse is to stand outside barefoot in the snow in my PJs ready to attack him the moment he gets home, I don't have to act on that anymore. You know, instead, I'm going to be restored to some sanity. And what happens is I get kind of this grace period where now I can make a different choice. You know, now I don't have to act on it.
One definition of insanity is performing the same action again and again and again and again and again and again, each time expecting to achieve a different result. Any of us who have been affected by the family disease of alcoholism have experienced this and other forms of insanity. The alcoholic cannot heal our wounds, neither can our willpower, quick-wittedness, or perseverance. Turning to these sources again and again is no more useful or sane than going to a car lot to buy groceries. Having continually failed to resolve our difficulties ourselves, most of us finally realize we must look for help in a more promising place. What we seek is something greater, beyond our own abilities, a source of help, comfort, guidance, and strength, unrestricted by human limitations.
Now, Einstein once said, we can't solve our problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. So if my thinking is my problem, I can't solve my thinking with my own thinking, even though my thinking thinks I can. Do you follow that? I need to go something outside of myself, something beyond that.
So. In time, we come to believe that only a power greater than ourselves has the power to restore us to sanity. To take step two, we don't have to believe that this will happen, only that it could. Step two is about possibility, and that is why it is about hope.
And hope is a really interesting spiritual principle. We have lots of spiritual principles in our program, generosity, honesty, kindness, love, etc. And all of those really come from the inside out. Hope is different. Hope comes from the outside in. Hope is what we're supposed to be giving to each other in our meetings. In the other programs, they suggest 90 meetings, 90 day. In Al-Anon, we suggest going to 6 meetings before deciding if it's for you. And the reason we do that is so we can parade in front of you all of these different people who are of different ages, different, you know, different color, different backgrounds, different jobs, all of these different people who have worked the program, experienced some sort of recovery or change. And I can look at them and say, well, if this can work for them, maybe, just maybe it can work for me. My sponsor is my favorite example of this. She's far crazier than I would ever hope to be, even after being in recovery for a long time. Sometimes it's a miracle to see that she and her husband are still alive. I can't believe he's still alive, especially. So the whole point of this is if I can look at her and say, you know, if that crazy lady can be reasonably happy and sane and content in her circumstances and in her life, maybe, just maybe, I can too.
In the process of taking step two, we open our hearts and minds to the possibility that such a power could actually exist in our lives.
In other words, I don't have to be sure about this. You know, I don't have to have all the answers. All I have to believe is the possibility. And if you're unsure, you know, think about that person you saw speaking at the meeting last week. You know, do you believe that she believes or that he believes? Can you believe that I believe, that my dad believes? That's enough.
I believe.
I don't understand electricity, but I'm not going to sit in the dark until I figure it out. Again, I don't have to understand any of this. Most often it's the God I don't understand, not of my understanding. I'm just going to flip the switch. You know, I don't have to figure any of this out. And the steps, the 12 steps, are really the process in flipping this switch so that the lights come on, a loving higher power begins to work in my life, and I can see. So that's what we're going to do today. Oh, you don't have the song for that.
Which one?
That I Came to Believe.
No.
All right. So if you're ready to take step two, please stand up. Or get your hands on your keyboard to type in your answer.
So do you believe or are you even willing to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity? Simply yes or no?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Congratulations, according to the literature, you just took step two.
Yay!
And I know some of you are thinking, wait a minute, my sponsor has had me on step one for a really long time, and you're not sure about this. And I don't always share this in the Al-Anon meetings, but I love remembering that when Bill Wilson first took the steps, he was in detox one night. He essentially did what we're going to do today, essentially steps one through nine, or all 12 of them, and have a spiritual experience in detox. Now, I think back, for those of you that may or may not know the story, but, you know, when his friend Abby came to visit him, I think back and wonder if he had brought him a notebook and asked, or a workbook, and asked him to answer 69 questions, you know, if we'd ever have a program today. He was in detox, shaking. You think he wants to write and answer all of these questions? Now, I'm not trying to you know, attack anyone for using the workbooks, but this stuff was meant to be simple. So simple, even an alcoholic would do it. And I say that with lots of love.
Wait a minute.
All right, moving on to step three. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him.
In step one, we learned that many of our problems may have resulted from our ineffective efforts to manage our own lives. And step two, we came to believe that a higher power could help restore us to sanity. It naturally follows that the next step would be turning to that power for help. Some members shorten the first three steps to I can't, God can, I'll let him. Obviously, if our past efforts have been futile and we believe that a power can help us, it makes sense to allow that power to do so. Deciding to turn to a power greater than ourselves for help may seem like a tremendous gamble, but really, what do we have to lose? We know that our old self-reliance and determination have let us down again and again and again and again and again. It only makes sense to try another way.
And if you remember, I asked you before we really even got started if you were ready to try another way. I assume if you haven't hung up yet or you're still here, you are.
So we choose differently. We make a decision, a commitment to take all of our concerns and feelings, worries, fears, resentments, loves, dreams, wishes, thoughts, choices, and relationships. In short, our will and our lives, and place them in the care of the God of our understanding. We don't have to figure anything out, know what the results will be, or even feel comfortable letting go of our efforts to control.
And we highlighted that because many of us Al-Anons tend to be control freaks. So we don't have to figure any of this out, know what the results will be, or even feel comfortable letting go of our efforts to control. We don't have to be entirely ready. You know, we're as ready as we can be right now at this moment.
All we need to do is make a decision. By making such a commitment, we stop setting ourselves up for the failure we've known in the past when we tried to manipulate people and events that were beyond our control. Instead, we make the decision to turn it over.
It should be in here. So Ann Smith, who was Dr. Bob's wife, and she worked with the Wives of Alcoholics long before Al-Anon even came about, she used to keep diaries. And over again, this quote shows up in them, saying, "We turn as much of ourselves over as we can to as much of God as we understand. We turn as much of ourselves as we can over to as much of God as we understand." In other words, I don't really have to be sure about this. You know, if I only understand this minuscule amount of my higher power and I can only turn over this mustard seed size of myself, that's enough. That's a start. So what does this decision look like? What does turning this all over look like?
What decision are we making? We're asked to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. Few of us are able to immediately turn over everything in our lives. Making the decision to do so is merely a commitment to try. To illustrate this aspect of step three, a member posed the following. Three frogs sat on a lily pad. One made a decision to jump off. How many frogs are left? The answer is three. The frog merely made the decision to jump. He hasn't jumped yet.
And again, I've seen so many people get stuck on this step. They're convinced that they have to be able to turn their entire will and their lives over at the snap of the finger right here and now. And if we could do that, we wouldn't need the rest of the steps. You know, my experience has been that it's through the process of steps 4 through 9 that I actively begin turning my will and my life over to my higher power. I don't do this in step three. Step three is just a decision to try. And I shorten it for those who may really struggle with this is, you know, are you willing to work the rest of the steps? You know, to me, step three is a decision and a commitment to just work the rest of the steps. And I assume if you're still here, you're willing to do that. Yeah. And for those of you that are ready to take step three, we do have a prayer from my favorite Al-Anon book, As We Understood. Dear God, I am powerless and my life is unmanageable without your help and guidance. I come to you today because I believe that you can restore and renew me to meet my needs today. Since I cannot manage my life or affairs, I have decided to give them to you. I put my life, my will, my thoughts, my desires, and ambitions in your hands. Congratulations, everyone, for just taking step three. And I saw someone ask about the music, and yes, we have a YouTube playlist, and we'll show you how to access that at the end. So from How Al-Anon Works.
Whether we have a well-defined relationship with God or a vague sense of some intangible force, choosing to turn our will and our lives over to God's care doesn't automatically make all of our problems disappear. We have simply made a decision. But by doing so, we've opened a door for help and stepped out of the way. Step 1, 2, and 3 complete our preparation to begin taking action in our recovery with the steps that follow.
On to step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. For those of you joining us on Zoom, I know Tamar has posted the link for the download so that you can download it, print it out, or if all you want to do is make a hand copy of the grid, you can do that. And then everyone here will pass out the papers in a few minutes. So, from Paths to Recovery.
Until we take our inventory, we don't know which character defects blocked us from recovery. Just do it, we're repeatedly advised. We don't need to do it perfectly. There'll be time to do it again. If we don't make a start, nothing about us will ever change. When we courageously and carefully examine where we are, the door to change is opened.
And again, I think it's really important for many of us in Al-Anon to realize that we don't need to do it perfectly. You know, there's time to do it again and again and again and again. All that's important is that we make a start.
Al-Anon members worldwide have experienced the power this step offers. By using the collective experiences of these members, we learn there is no one way to take a fourth step inventory. There is no one way to take a fourth step inventory. We are repeatedly told that the single key to this step is to take action by doing it. What form do we use for step four?
Any form.
Will we do it perfectly the first time? Probably not. It doesn't matter. What does matter is that by completing a first, second, or third inventory, members learn new facts about themselves. Some compare working a fourth step to that of peeling the layers of an onion one layer at a time until the core is reached. It matters not how we do it. What matters is that we do it. An Alateen sponsor shares that in working with young people, the easiest way to work the steps is to keep it simple. A fourth step meeting for this group involves taking one sheet of paper and folding it in half. On one half, the sponsor suggests that members list their assets, all the good things they know about themselves. On the other half, the sponsor suggests that they list their character defects. She suggests that each list should be equal in length. As the teens begin this simple fourth step, they're encouraged to talk with their personal or group sponsor when they get stuck. Not go home and write. The Alateen sponsor stated that in this loving environment, this approach toward working step four is simple, and for these young people, thorough. She added that it works for adults in Al-Anon too.
So I think we're going to pass out our grid. And again, for those of you who are at home, hopefully you're able to either print it out or just hand copy the grid that you see right now. And step four is an inventory, a list of characteristics, thoughts and behavior patterns, relationships and events that make us who we are today. Now, when these steps were written, everyone kind of knew what an inventory was. It was a list. You know, if you were in charge of a store and you took inventory, you'd want to look and see, you know, what's good, what's bad, what's selling well, what do I want to keep, what's expired, what should I get rid of? It's a list, and that's it. When our sense of reality proves unreliable, we need help to regain our footing. Al-Anon provides a simple step-by-step approach to rebuilding our lives, our self-confidence. And that's from how Al-Anon works. And again, these steps were not designed to be done alone. You know, it's really important that we do this with someone. So we're passing out papers here. I hope everyone online is ready.
Okay, guidelines for the fourth step inventory and fifth step sharing. So if everyone wants to go to the guidelines. Before we start, I want everyone to reach up as high as you can. Just reach up.
Everyone at home too.
Now reach a little higher. If you had followed the first direction, you would not be able to follow the second direction. And the point is we're actually going to follow some directions. Objective, the purpose of this admission is to come clean before God, to allow ourselves to be exactly who we are within this vitally important spiritual relationship. That's from how Al-Anon works. The moral inventory consists of a list of character defects that separate us from God and a list of character assets that bring us closer to God. We use the moral inventory to sit down in writing the people, institutions, and principles that keep us separated from our higher power. Today, we're going to do only people because it's simpler. First, we're going to examine the moral inventory and read the explanation of terms for the fourth step, the negative defects, and positive assets on the inventory checklist. Make sure you understand the meaning of each subject.
All right, and since we have people at home, let's make it a little simpler and just jump right into action. So on your grid at the top, there's some lines with spaces, and I want you to write a name. I suggest writing the alcoholic loved one, you know, or another spouse, children, you know, just one name. And we're just going to go ahead and take some action. So as we read through the list of character defects, I want you to put a dot. And if it relates to you and your relationship with your name that you have on the list.
Not your own name.
Not your own name. And just a dot, because those dots are going to become something else. So it's important that you follow that direction. Okay, is everyone kind of clear on what we're doing? Those on Zoom? All right. So let's start with anger.
A violent, vengeful passion or emotion excited by a real or supposed injury to oneself or others. Includes resentment, ill temper, sulking, brooding, a hostile or indignant attitude.
So that name you put at the top of the list, are you angry with them? If it's the first name that came into your head, you most likely are. Have you ever called them that sick son of a bitch? That's anger. Put a dot. Obsession.
Depraved or unlawful craving, especially in Texas. An eagerness to possess or enjoy, excessive desire, lust after money or lust after things.
So are you obsessing about this relationship or person? One of the suggestions I heard is if I think about it for more than 5 minutes in a day, is it 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
10 minutes, 20.
I'm probably obsessing. So put a dot. If you have obsession in this relationship.
Fear, being afraid of losing something we have or not getting something we want. Includes phobia, terror, panic, anxiety, uneasiness, worry, paranoia, depression. Now, these are not the clinical definitions. That's different. Self-centered fear is at the root of our disease.
So, do you have any fear in this relationship? Are you afraid he'll leave? Afraid he'll come back? Afraid he'll leave again and then come back again and again and again? Anyone else? Afraid he'll die? They're all very common. If so, put a dot.
Envy, discontent inspired by the sight of another's success or superiority. Includes jealousy, suspicion, doubting the faithfulness of a friend, wanting another's possessions or attributes.
So are you envious of this person? I think the most common example that comes up when I work with people is this idea that, you know, we're home taking care of the kids, the finances, you know, everything, money, while he gets to go off and drink and seems to appear to have absolutely no responsibilities whatsoever. And that's envy. It also falls under anger most of the time. So are you envious in this relationship? If so, put a dot.
Dishonesty. Taking something or not returning something that does not belong to us. Guilt is an indication of dishonesty.
Now, guilt and shame feel very similar, but they're different. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But here we're focused on guilt.
Includes lying or withholding the truth, taking advantage of another's misfortune or weakness, not contributing a fair share, and avoiding responsibility.
So are you being dishonest in this relationship? And remember, this is your inventory, not theirs. I don't care if he's been lying to you for the last 20 years. What we're focused on is your part. Have you been dishonest with him? If so, put a dot.
Greed, desire to have more than one needs or one's fair share. Includes selfishness, stealing, gluttony, wanting to go or going to excess.
So have you been greedy in this relationship? Taking more than your fair share. Do you have a secret bank account he doesn't know about? That could also fall under dishonesty.
Laziness, not having the will or desire to take action, includes the avoidance and or slowness of completing a task.
Like a fourth step.
Assignment or obligations, lacking the desire to work, putting forth less than a good effort.
So have you been lazy in this relationship? Are you holding up your end of the bargain? And again, this is your inventory, not theirs. I don't care if he's been lazy. It's not that I don't care. It's that that's not what we're looking at. You know, have you been lazy? Have you been doing your part? You know, when was the last time you called mom or dad?
Pride, feeling better than or feeling less than someone else. Feelings of superiority include prejudice about race, education, religion, sarcasm, putting someone else down to feel better, ego, egotism, self-centeredness, judging, arrogance, desire to be noticed or have one's way, belief one is always right. Extreme self-centeredness, ego, is the main activator of other defects. Feelings of inferiority include self-pity, low self-esteem, lack of self-worth, lack of respect, belief one is always wrong, need for validation, need for approval. Shame stems from pride.
And very simply, pride is judgment. I feel better than or less than or both. You know, I'm judging you. I'm judging myself. It's judgment. I said earlier with anger, have you ever called him that stupid sick son of a bitch? If you did, you have a dot next to pride as well. And I said earlier that there was a difference between guilt and shame. They feel very similar, but they're both very different. Guilt is an indication that I have done something wrong. It says I've done something wrong. I apologize. I grew up in NA. So the best example I have is if I stole grandma's TV, I owe her a TV. That doesn't usually apply to Al-Anons, but I don't know. Whereas shame says I am something wrong. Shame is this idea that God made a piece of junk. There's something wrong with me. I'm worthless, and on and on and on. You know, and these two things are different, and therefore the amends for them are different. If I have done something wrong, you know, the amends is usually pretty direct. I need to set it right. I need to, you know, pay the bills. I need to, you know, give what I owe. Shame, on the other hand, is spiritual. The amends are different. That has to do with my relationship with God and my higher power and myself. Does that make sense to everyone? All right. So everyone should have a grid with a name at the top and dots going down the column. All right. So here are some of the directions that we already did.
Look over the list of defects. We'll look at the assets later. When a name comes to mind that you associate with one or more of your shortcomings, write it at the top of a column. Then under the name, put dots in the boxes to the right of the defects that apply to you in regards to that person, institution, or principle. Add other names as you think of them. Look over the explanation of terms sheet to help you in this process. The dots are reminders of the events and circumstances you need to talk about with your sharing partner.
And for those of you on Zoom, I know Tamara's gonna work with you to connect with the sharing partner. Everyone here will connect you in a little bit.
One sharing partner.
Yes.
While writing our inventory, we concentrate only on ourselves. This is our inventory, not another person's. We consider only our own involvement in situations, even when something may not have been entirely our fault.
All right, so let's do a couple of examples. Well, hold on. All right, let's move on.
Where there are dots indicates what you need to discuss with your sharing partner during your fifth step. Once you've described the various incidents associated with the dots, your sharing partner can help you determine if an amends needs to be made. Then turn the dot into a check mark.
But only after you've discussed this with your sharing partner.
Briefly.
Right now, you should still have names and dots.
Not all dots will become check marks. Remember, recovery comes from sharing our shortcomings with God, ourselves, and another human being. You and your partner may also come up with an amends plan, and you can bring it to your sponsor later. Many of us find that our higher power can speak to us through others, and this is a prime opportunity for such communication. Once you discuss the defects and possible amends, you will have determined what has kept you from finding the spiritual solution to your problems. We end the sharing session by describing the assets that we already have, those items with the least number of check marks. And those assets will be strengthened, those with the most check marks, by making the amends. The defects with check marks to the right of them are the shortcomings you turn over to the God of your understanding in steps 6 and 7. The names above the check marks become your 8th step amends list. The check marks and the notes taken identify the specific amends you are to make in step 9. Therefore, you will have everything you need to take steps 4 through 9.
All on one sheet of paper.
Wow.
All right, so we're going to do some examples following those directions that we just did. So we're just going to jump right into doing a 5th step. By the way, congratulations to everyone who put a name down and a bunch of dots. You just did a 4th step. Yeah. There's a couple reasons why we need a sponsor. It's just because they know our story a little more. They can, you know, call us on our BS and they know more and more what's going on. But really, we can do inventory with anyone. And the idea is when we get to amends, we need someone who knows a bit more about the situation to help us figure that out. So a couple of things before we pair off and take a break. It didn't come up this time, but one of the things that usually comes up is I'm being dishonest about my feelings. And I think it's really important to recognize that I don't need to be honest about my feelings all the time. You know, one of the examples I've been using is I don't watch Dr. Phil for the therapeutic value of watching one family member share their feelings with another. I watch Dr. Phil because of the chaos and the drama that ensues because someone shares their feelings with another. Does that make sense? So I don't always need to share my feelings. So if you put down dishonesty because you haven't told him how you feel, you know, that's not necessarily dishonesty. We don't need to share that all the time. You know, we do need to share that with someone like a sponsor or a trusted Al-Anon friend, but not necessarily with the person we're having negative feelings with. So I think that's the only other common question. Do you have anything to add? All right. So moving on. So once upon a time, this is story time. Once upon a time, I was born. And when I am born, there was this channel and connection between me and God. And it was perfectly clear. After all, I've been born. I haven't done anything yet. Then one day, I'm about 7 years old, and Mom bakes some cookies. And I say, Mom, can I have a cookie? And she says, no. Oh, Dan, your computer's doing something. Okay. So I ask Mom, can I have a cookie? And she says, no, it's too close to dinner. You'll spoil your appetite. So I steal a cookie. And I put this little block between me and God. The mom comes to me and she says, Iris, did you steal a cookie? And I say, no. So now I've lied. And I begin to feel guilty. I'm 7 years old. I might feel ashamed, like, oh my goodness, I'm such a terrible kid, and on and on and on, and all of this over a cookie. But I'm 7 years old, so I go to Mom, and I say, Mom, I stole a cookie. I was wrong. I may or may not say I'm sorry because I may or may not be sorry, but I was wrong. I stole a cookie. And she says, it's okay. She gives me a hug, and then the channel is clear again. So that's essentially what we're doing here. Now, for most of us, when we come to Al-Anon, our channel may look something more like this, completely blocked. I've been likening it to spiritual constipation. Nothing's moving. Nothing's getting through. Now, what's amazing is once I don't have to clear the entire channel in order for a loving God to begin working in my life. You know, and this is what we're doing. We're identifying what the blocks are. We're going to remove them so a loving higher power can solve my problem. And I don't have to clear the whole channel. If I can get rid of one thing, say maybe I have this defect of gossiping too much. If I can stop that one little thing, that one change, that one amends, that's enough for a loving higher power to start working in my life. Or what if I can get rid of that resentment, that really big, giant boulder I've been holding on to for the last 10 years? You know, that's enough for a start. Now a loving higher power can get through to me. Does that make sense to everyone? So I love this diagram. I think it explains the whole process of the steps so perfectly. You know, it's like a spiritual ex-lax. All right. So we're going to read step five, and then we'll break up and take a break. Step five says,
committed to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Step four helped us learn about ourselves, our strengths, and our shortcomings. In taking step five, we acknowledge what our inventory has helped us to discover, revealing these insights not only to ourselves and our higher power, but to another person as well. We try to identify the exact nature of our wrongs, the motives or patterns behind these shortcomings, recognizing that many of our past errors were merely symptoms of an underlying problem or weakness of character. For example, our inventory might have unearthed occasions when we stole cookies from our local market. Upon closer examination, we may realize that the underlying problem was a fear that we wouldn't have enough to eat. The thought of admitting our darkest secrets to someone else can be frightening at first, but if we can summon the courage to challenge these fears and can go ahead and take step five in spite of them, we take a huge stride toward personal freedom. Step five does not ask us to show our faults to the whole world, or even our home group, but to our own hearts, to the God of our understanding, and to a trusted friend. We're not looking for someone to tell us how to handle our problems, but rather for a loving witness who can provide perspective on our spiritual journey, one who can appreciate what we're doing and how we are growing.
And I think it's really important to recognize that, you know, this, even though we've simplified it and made it pretty easy, it's not necessarily easy, comfortable stuff. And I think one of my favorite roles in this process is getting to be a cheerleader for someone else. You know, we're doing it. We're making changes. We're growing, and it's amazing. All right. So during the break, I want you to try and discuss at least two columns on your inventory using the grid and the instructions. And if you feel comfortable to discuss amends plans, go ahead and do that. If not, you know, you can save that for your sponsor later. And the idea is you're going to have a name with some check marks under it, or two names with some check marks under them. All right, and I love to share this. Carrie Fisher, who was kind of a poster child for ACOA, Adult Children of Alcoholics, once said, if my life wasn't funny, it'd just be true, and that's unacceptable. And we share this because, again, you know, this isn't meant to be this difficult, hard, painful, drudging, you know, 4 years of my life of suffering to get this done sort of process. It's okay to laugh about these things, you know. And Al-Anon, we understand, as perhaps few others can. It's okay to keep it light and have fun. And so I don't know if I can get the sound to play. Can't.
I can. But I
just imagine the Star Wars theme song playing right now as we tell you to go forth, yeah. and do some work. Right. Again, welcome back from the break, everyone. First, let's get some energy going, if the music wasn't enough. Oh, first, congratulations. You just started your fourth step inventory and fifth step sharing. We strongly suggest that you complete your full fourth and fifth steps within the next 7 days so you can have a full spiritual experience. Maybe get your sharing partner's phone number or a way to connect with them. Or if you're ever looking for a way to connect, we'll give you the information for our Facebook page at the end of the day, and we can connect you with someone. Or, of course, use your sponsor.
Oh, okay. I'm going to tell my favorite Al-Anon joke. My absolute favorite Al-Anon joke. So this guy walks into a bar and he sits down. He says, bartender, give me a shot and a beer. The bartender brings it. He throws it down. He says, bartender, he says, bring me another. The bartender brings it and he says, bartender, he says, bring me another. He says, oh, hell, just leave the bottle. Bartender says, I don't think I've ever seen you here before. He says, are you new in town? The guy says, yeah. He says, actually, I just got out of prison. He said, out of prison? He said, how long were you there? He says, 25 years. That's why I'm so thirsty. Bartender says, 25 years. He says, what did you do? He says, well, I got drunk one night and murdered my wife. Three stools down, a woman leans over and says, so I understand you're single. If you can identify with that, raise your hand. We do find each other, don't we?
So now that you've been here for a little bit, at least a couple hours, let's teach you the Al-Anon handshake. And the Al-Anon salute. Come on, do it with me, everyone. And last, we have the Al-Anon wine. Where have you been? It's okay to laugh in recovery. One of the things I learned was even some of my most horrible, devastating experiences were something that we could laugh about. You know, we understand as perhaps you others can. I know when I first came in, I was so upset that so many people were happy, and here I was in this miserable circumstance. And you know what? It's okay to have fun and laugh about this stuff. You know, like I said, if my life wasn't funny, it would just be true, and that's unacceptable. So let's start up again with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. And we're going to jump right into it with step 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character.
Step 6 is a step of preparation for the next phase of our personal recovery. Step 6 does not get rid of these defects. It only asks us to become ready.
And I've always kind of seen a pattern. You know, we talk about the 3 A's, awareness, acceptance, action. And over again in working the steps, I've kind of seen that same pattern. I become aware of what's going on. I become aware of these things that are making my life difficult. And I learn to accept them, and then I take some action. And step 6, as it's going to talk about, is all about acceptance. And paths to recovery.
Spiritually, we're faced with asking our higher power, not our friends, Al-Anon members, minister, or sponsor, to help us. This is a one-on-one relationship between ourselves and the God of our understanding.
Or lack of understanding.
Faith of this type is foreign to many of us. It is unconditional. Letting go of all our defects does not mean giving up. There's much work to be done in steps 7 through 12. Letting go also does not mean becoming passive or not continuing to learn and grow in the program. Letting go means giving up the struggle of our self-will and turning it over to God.
So in step 3, we didn't really turn things over. We made a decision that that's what we're going to do. In steps 4 and 5, we became aware of what it is we need to turn over. And in step 6, we're going to try and start accepting the help that our higher power is going to give us. Helen on work.
But step 6 says nothing about changing ourselves or making our own defects of character go away. In fact, this step points out that we are powerless to remove our defects of character by ourselves. Instead, we are reminded that we are in a partnership with a power greater than ourselves. Our role in this partnership is to accept ourselves as we are, flaws and all, and to become willing to let go of all that stands in the way of our health and growth. No other action is required. I thought I had to write and answer questions.
How long do you want this to take?
No other action is required. The rest is up to a power greater than ourselves.
So there it is. There's our directions right out of the literature. Our role in this partnership is to accept ourselves as we are, flaws and all, and to become willing to let go of all that stands in the way of our health and growth. So if you're ready to take step 6, let's have a moment of silence to ask our higher power for that willingness. Congratulations. According to the literature, you just took step 6. Give yourself a round of applause. And here's what happens as a result of having done this from How Al-Anon Works.
Paradoxically, by accepting our limitations, we can avail ourselves of unlimited possibilities. With God's help, we can overcome seemingly impossible obstacles. Miracles can grace our lives, and serenity can take the place of despair. Our defects of character can be blessings in disguise, because in order to be free of them, we must deepen our faith, and that spiritual depth will bless our lives.
Wow, sounds pretty good. So moving on to step 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. From Paths to Recovery.
Now that we've taken our inventory, discussed the exact nature of our wrongs, and become entirely ready for God to remove our defects, it follows that the next step would be to ask him to do so.
And again, it's that awareness, acceptance, and here we are taking some action.
Many people confuse humility with humiliation. But humiliation is a form of abuse and has no place in our spiritual growth. When we speak of humility, we speak about self-acceptance. In step 6, we learn to accept our part and our relationship with our higher power. When we are humble, we are totally willing to accept God's help, knowing that without it, we cannot progress further. In humility, we possess self-esteem, accept ourselves as we are, assets and defects alike, and extend the same acceptance to others. By accepting that God can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves, we begin to achieve the humility that is necessary for change to take place. In step 7, we put that acceptance to work. We take action.
So if you remember, I think I said it back in step 2 or 3, you know, I don't understand how electricity works. I don't have to sit in the dark until I figure it out. I can just flip the switch and turn on the lights. And for me, and for many of us who have been part of these workshops for a long time, kind of figured out that this is the exact moment when we flip that switch from being one way to changing to another. You know, this was the exact moment when the lights came on and there was something that began working in my life. So for those of you that are, or wait, before we take step 7, there's a bit of a catch, because we know how Al-Anons can be.
Nonetheless, even after we accept the fact that we need the assistance of a higher power, many of us try to figure out exactly what we need and hand our higher power a list of tasks to fulfill on our behalf.
Anyone else?
This is not humility. This is self-will. True humility is based upon letting go of self-will and relying instead upon the will of our higher power. Again, we admit that our own resources have let us down and we need help. To ask for such help is to take a huge leap of faith, to truly place ourselves, our futures, and our actions in the care of God.
Here are the directions from how Al-Anon works.
We neither grovel regarding our needs as shameful, nor do we demand treating our needs as all important. There are a variety of ways to ask. We may pray, meditate, visualize, write, speak aloud, or sing our requests. But whatever form we choose, we communicate our desire to be free of excess baggage. We simply speak from the heart.
And for those of you that may want a more formal prayer or way to do your 7-step, we do have a 7-step prayer from As We Understood. So for those of you that want to say that with us, I give you all of me, the good and the bad, the character defects and shortcomings, my selfishness, resentments, and problems. I know that you will work them out in accordance with your plan. Such as I am, take and use me in your service, guide and direct my ways, and show me what to do for you. Congratulations, everyone. According to the literature, you just took the 7 steps. And we're just going to keep going right into step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
Our specific assignment is to make a list of the persons we have harmed. The second part of step 8 challenges us to become willing to make amends. Many a member has jumped to step 9 without considering the power this step offers. Many Al-Anon members, having completed their 4th steps, already have a list of persons they have harmed.
And assuming that you did the inventory grid with us during the break, you already have a list. It might only be one or two people, but that's a list. That's a start, and you can still keep going from there. And we're going to do this again and again and again.
No matter how pure our intentions, our actions have consequences, and sometimes intentionally or unintentionally, we hurt those around us. But if we set all self-justification aside and keep the focus strictly on ourselves, we must admit that we were responsible for causing harm. In order to recover, it's necessary to give up the hope for a better past.
Can you share anything on that?
At the end of the night. Other of us carry an unwarranted burden of responsibility, believing ourselves to be the source of most of the pain and suffering in our lives and in the lives of those around us. We feel that we have harmed everyone with whom we have come in contact. This is just as much a distortion of reality as thinking we have done no harm. Sometimes people's suffering is of their own making. Sometimes we contribute to the problem. Step 8 provides an opportunity to learn the difference between what is and is not our responsibility and take a more realistic look at the efforts of our actions.
And when we did inventory earlier, part of what comes up as we're discussing inventory is what can we do about it? You know, what is and isn't my part? What are the possible amends? These things kind of blend together. And I found that, you know, doing it this way quickly and right there as we're already talking about it, it works best. Rather than waiting to get that list and discuss what amends are to be done. We can do it as we do inventory.
If we keep the focus on ourselves and our part, whether it is 5% or 95% of the problem, we are better able to become willing. How do we acquire this willingness? Many seek prayer and meditation. Sometimes we have to pray for the willingness to be willing.
Or the willingness to be willing to be willing to be willing, and so on. So for those of you that are ready for step 8, let's take a moment of silence while we ask our higher power for the willingness to make our amends. And congratulations to everyone for just taking step 8. Give yourself a round of applause.
Willingness is all that is asked of us. With a willingness and a desire for increased recovery in our lives, we turn to our higher power to help us move on to step 9.
And step 9 says, we may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
Whenever I get mad at you, you never seem to be upset. How do you manage to control your temper?
I just go and clean the toilet.
How does that help?
I use your toothbrush. All right, a little more on that in a minute.
We cannot undo what has been done in the past. We can express our regrets and make a commitment to try not to repeat past mistakes, but what's done is done. By taking step 9, we rid ourselves of the guilt that has weighed us down for so long. By facing the harm we have done and finding the most suitable form of amends for the situation, we can clean up whatever mess we have created and leave the past in the past.
And Maude can buy Harold a new toothbrush.
Step 9 speaks of making direct amends wherever possible. The emphasis of this step is on facing those we have harmed and setting the record straight. We wouldn't want embarrassment or resentment to tempt us to avoid an apology that we need to make or the repayment of a debt we owe. Nobody is standing watch over us to make sure we take this step with sincerity. We are the only ones who will ever truly know. If we wish to be free from the terrible, suffocating weight of guilt, wow. We must take whatever action is necessary to make amends for the harm we have caused. Only then will we find real relief.
And I believe that there are three different kinds of amends. There's direct amends, there's indirect amends or living amends, and there's spiritual amends. And the reason step 9 focuses so much on these direct amends is because those are the ones we're most likely to avoid. I think they're the scariest and maybe the hardest from our perception. So that's why step 9 really focuses on it. But we're going to talk about all three in a little bit. From past to recovery.
Step 9 calls for direct amends, except when to do so might cause further injury. We want to be careful that we aren't trying to achieve our personal serenity at the expense of someone else.
And this example might not relate to everyone, but the biggest example I've gotten to experience with the sponsee is she shared that she cheated on her husband. And in this situation, the question was, well, do I tell him? And the answer was, well, no. I mean, if you tell, you know, are you planning on staying with him in this relationship or not? Are you planning on doing it again? She wasn't. And really the answer was, if you tell him, that's just going to cause him more harm. And not only that, but there's a third person in this scenario that you may also harm. Now, mind you, every situation can be a little bit different and the amends can look a little different. But in situations like that, sometimes we just have to swallow it, you know, and we don't get to relieve ourselves of our suffering at the expense of someone else, you know. But that doesn't mean there isn't other things we need to do, such as counseling or marriage counseling or, you know, something along those lines. From past to recovery.
In making amends, we need to understand that we are not necessarily making an apology. There are differences between amends and apologies.
This is one of my friends in recovery, and we had to let her know that this was not a direct enough amends. She's wearing a baseball cap for those who can't see it. From paths to recovery.
We may or may not ask for forgiveness, and we may or may not experience a positive response. In many cases, our changed behavior indicated stronger amends than words could ever be. If we have any expectations of the response to amends, we are setting ourselves up for disappointment. Some amends need immediate attention, and in most cases, we can do this by changing our behavior. Financial amends often fall into this category. While we may not be able to pay our debts immediately, we can make a plan for repayment.
And I would call those more like living amends. I need to make, you know, a bigger life term change as far as my continuous action. Never mind, I forgot what I was going to say. From paths to recovery.
The key is that we do not avoid making amends in order to spare ourselves discomfort. That will only increase our guilt and prevent our healing. In some cases, we need to stop doing something, such as gossiping, complaining, or controlling.
Right. So what I was going to say is the dictionary definition of amends is to change. That's simply all we're doing is we're going to change. We're going to change our behaviors and our attitudes. Apologies don't necessarily fall in that category. Most of the things I've done, I can't say I'm actually sorry for. I did them intentionally. And given the same circumstances and situation, I'd probably do it again. But that doesn't mean that there aren't amends or changes that I can make.
Keeping it simple is important. Having an action plan is equally important. Reviewing our intended amends with a sponsor or another Al-Anon friend helps us consider our motivation and the consequences of our intended actions. We pray for guidance as we approach each task. It helps to call our
sponsor
to check out our intentions and to talk about what we have in mind. A sponsor can help us to look at our motives and to plan our approach.
I'm seeing a bit of a pattern here. Oh, before we go there. So I believe that a sponsor is most important in two areas of working steps. I can do inventory with just about anyone, but in the ninth step, and I discussed this a bit earlier, when I'm talking about amends and needing to make these changes, having a sponsor becomes really important because I need someone who kind of knows me and kind of knows my story more directly than just anyone. You know, I need someone who can call me out on my BS and someone I don't have to rehash the same thing over and over again and who can really pinpoint what needs to be done. The other place I need a sponsor is in step 12, and we'll talk about that later. So for those of you who are willing to keep doing this stuff and get better, here is our step 9 pledge. You can put your hand on your heart. Those of you at home, another hand on your keyboard to type it out. I will not make direct amends without first discussing them with my sponsor.
So do you need a sponsor to make amends?
Yes.
Okay.
Keep in mind that we need to amend the actions or inaction that caused harm, not our feelings. If we need to relieve ourselves of secret feelings, we discuss with our sponsor or another friend who will not be harmed.
And again, I discussed this a bit back when we did inventory.
Let me go back to that question. No, you don't need a sponsor to make your amends if you're willing to take the risk of having to make more amends for having made the amends.
And that's a really uncomfortable place to be. So, you want to talk about this?
Sure. Two tests for amends, the only two I've ever found in 40 years. What can I do to make the relationship or situation better? Some things can never be fixed. Almost everything can be made better. There's something I can do. And what is the right thing to do? Not who is right, but what is right? If you stole, example I use, if you stole grandma's TV, you owe grandma a TV, not an apology. Want me to go on?
Yeah.
Okay. Example I like to use is I took a sponsee through the steps. This was 12 or 13 years ago now. And at that time, he'd been in recovery for about 10 years. He was married he was in recovery for like 12, 13 years, married for 10 years. He had a couple little kids. The relationship was just horrible. You know, they were on the verge of divorce, and, you know, they were down to the point of having hall sex. You know, this is where you pass each other in the hall and go, screw you. Some of you may be familiar with that. And anyway, we got to this point in the steps, and I asked him, I said, well, what are you going to do about this? Because she was number one on the amends list. He says, I don't know. I said, I don't know either. I said, let's talk about it. This is one of the reasons it's important to do this with a sponsor. So we talked about it for a while, and I said, well, let me ask you this. I said, what do you do that drives her crazy? What are the couple things that you do that just drive her up a wall? Now, if you've been in a relationship with somebody for more than 30 days, you know what you do that drives them up the wall, right? Sometimes we do it intentionally.
Oh, yeah.
I said, so what do you do drives her crazy? He says, I won't take out the trash on Thursday nights. I said, why not? He says, I work all day. I get home late. I'm tired. She's home all day. I don't want to take out the trash. What's the amend? Take out the trash, right? Come on. This isn't complicated. I said, what else? I said, she wants me to get up and go to church with her and the kids on Sunday morning. I said, why don't you go? He says, it's the only day I can sleep in. He says, I don't want to get up. I don't want to go. I said, I think you have a choice here. We always have a choice with this stuff. I said, I think you can either get up and go to church with her and the kids in the morning, on Sunday morning, or you will see the kids every other Sunday after the divorce. Take your pick. And I didn't see him for a long time after that. Next time I saw him, months later, I said, how you doing? He says, it's better. The last time I saw him was 7 or 8 years after the fact. I said, how's it going? He says, well, we're still married. One of the kids is in college. The other one's about ready to graduate from high school. You think this isn't powerful stuff? Consider this for just a moment. What if the person who bothers you the most stopped doing the two things that bother you the most? Do you think you'd have a different relationship? And we have the power to make this happen. But it's like I told him at the time, I said, you don't get to go tell her that you're going to, you know, that you're going to take out the trash. You just take out the trash. You know, you don't tell her you're going to get up on Sundays and go to church. You just get up and go to church. You know, we don't get any points for being an ex-asshole. You know, we just change the behavior. Does this make sense to everybody? Can you see how powerful that is?
And there's a reading in, what's the one for adult children? Hope for Today. There's a reading in Hope for Today that likens it to algebra. You know, A plus B equals C. If the value of B changes, the value of C will change. A doesn't have to change at all. So if my alcoholic loved one is A and I'm B, and I'm B, and the sum of our relationship is C, when I change, the relationship changes, and he doesn't have to change at all, you know. And taking that a step further, typically when I change for the better, so does the relationship. All right, slideshow's frozen. There it is. We can't change the alcoholic, but A plus B equals C. Any change in me will change the relationship. And it doesn't have to be complicated, difficult stuff. It can be as simple as taking out the garbage. It can be as simple as maybe I don't answer the phone tonight. It can be as simple as, you know, not fighting with my kid when she's having a tantrum.
And if you aren't sure whether or not that's true, consider this for just a minute. This is Al-Anon. If they change, do you think the relationship would change? That's what you've been trying to do all along, isn't it? Change them to change the relationship? You don't have to change them to change the relationship. You can do that all by yourself.
Talk about empowering. So the magic words for amends are, I was wrong. What can I do? And most people just want an admittance that we were wrong. You know, they've probably heard us say, I'm sorry, enough times to last a lifetime. You know, and most people just want to hear, I was wrong. You know, and what can I do? What can I do to make the situation or relationship a little bit better? It doesn't have to be complicated stuff.
You want me to go on? Don't go to the next.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so I've been privileged to lead STEP workshops now for about 20 years, and I was doing a workshop about 12 or 13 years ago in Akron, and I got to this point in the workshop, and now we've already told you that the amends...
No, we didn't. Huh? We didn't mention it.
Yeah, it's right on the sheet. You didn't mention it?
Nope.
No, I guess you didn't. Okay, the amends for anger is forgiveness. That's the amends. Okay, that's the amends. And anyway, it had already come up in the workshop, and I got to this point in the workshop. A woman stands up in the back of the room, and she's angry. She's hot. And she says, her words, almost exactly, I will be damned if I will forgive the uncle that raped me when I was 9. What do you do with that? That's pretty tough stuff. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard that or something similar in the rooms of recovery. Unfortunately, some of this stuff is not uncommon among people like us. And I looked at her and I said, I don't know. I have no idea. You know, at that point, I've been in recovery for 30 years. We tried all kinds of different things. None of them had ever worked very well. A lot of you have had that same experience. You've tried all kinds of things. None of them have ever worked very well. I said, but I'll tell you what, you come back next month and I'll have an answer for you, because we were doing the workshop every month. You know, I don't know why I told her I was going to have an answer in 30 days. I hadn't had one in 30 years, but I told her I'm going to have an answer in 30 days. But by this point, having a little experience in the spiritual realm, I know that when we put these things out there, the universe responds. 2 weeks later, one of my sponsees comes to me, Eddie. Eddie looked just like Santa Claus, except he was black. You usually don't see a black Santa Claus. I loved Eddie. Eddie comes to me. He says, I'm chairing a meeting next week. He says, we're doing a panel. He says, I want you to speak about forgiveness. No coincidences, right? I said, okay, I will do that. And I figured in order to be prepared for this, I should look it up in the dictionary. So I did. I did not get the answer I was expecting. This is the it's not the answer you're expecting either. This is the dictionary definition of forgiveness. To give up resentment. I didn't like that. I looked it up in four more dictionaries. Four out of the five, it was the number one definition, was the number two in the fifth one. That may have changed now, but that's the way it was. And I didn't like that, you know. And I thought, well, I know how to do that. You guys taught me how to do that. You know, if you've been in the rooms of recovery for any period of time, they tell you that when we resent somebody, we need to pray for them. You've heard that, right? Matter of fact, the original directions say we're supposed to pray for the person for 2 weeks, which I always thought was highly optimistic because, I prayed for both my ex-wives. I prayed for their attorneys. I prayed for the IRS. All of those things took a lot longer than 2 weeks, but the resentment went away. Okay, so I do need to pray for the person, but there's a little bit more to it than that. Now, follow along, because I'm going to show you a process here, okay? My Al-Anon book, do you have it?
One Day at a Time.
Yeah, One Day at a Time has one page on forgiveness out of the entire book. I used to think it was an oversight. I thought, we don't forgive it, Alan. We remember. Okay. But then I went back and I reread the page again. And in rereading the page, I discovered that it's the only page that I need, because here's what it says. Unless we first judge and condemn them for what they did, there would be no reason for us to forgive them. In other words, I wouldn't need to forgive you if I hadn't already judged you. Isn't that interesting? See, the problem isn't that you're an asshole. The problem is I've decided that you're an asshole. The fact you're an asshole is between you and God. It has absolutely nothing to do with me. Nothing. Which character defect is this? We just did this. Come on. Which character defect?
Anger.
No. Pride. Pride. I become judge, jury, and executioner. So I need to pray for you. The character defect that I ask God to remove specifically is pride. Follow along. There's a process here. I need to pray for you. I ask God to remove the pride. I keep doing these workshops. It's one of the reason I do them is because I learn so much. And a couple months later, my friend Aida shows up at a workshop. I've known her for over 30 years. And she interrupts at this point. She says, I just learned something. Now, some of you may have heard this before. I had never heard it up to that point. She says, when I pray for you, I also need to pray for myself. Because the reason is, when I start praying for you, I'll start to feel better, and then I'll stop praying, and then I'll feel bad again. It's kind of like I go to the doctor. The doctor says, you're sick. You need an antibiotic. Take it for 15 days. I take the antibiotic for 10 days. I feel a little better, and I stop taking it, and the infection comes back. I have to take the full course. Does this make sense for everybody? Okay, so I need to pray for you. The character defect I ask God to remove is pride, and then I need to pray for myself so that I will do this long enough so that it'll work. So I keep doing the workshops. A couple of months later, this young woman shows up. She is sitting just about where Lori's sitting. I can still see her. Iris was there. And she looked like she was 14 years old, really young. And I'd never seen her before, neither had anybody else. Nobody ever saw her afterward either. I'm convinced to this day she's an angel, but that's just my... Nobody ever saw her before or after. But we got to this point in the workshop, and she interrupted, and she said, this is simple. I said, really? She says, yes. She says, this is simple. This is easy. Come on. It's frozen. Bless them, change me. Write it down. If you don't get anything else out of this entire workshop, take that and use it. It will change your life. Bless them, change me. Works best if you put the name in. Bless John, change me. Bless Mary, change me. Bless Mom, change me. Okay? Iris is going to tell you 30 times a day for 30 days. Most of the people that I work with aren't that structured. I just tell them every time the person comes to mind, bless them, change me. Bless them, change me. It will change your life. I absolutely guarantee you. This is... 12 years ago now, something like that, 12, 13 years ago. And we've now had the opportunity to explain this to a few thousand people, and everybody who's tried it has said it's worked. Okay. Now, I have to tell you, if it's a major thing like being raped when you're 9 years old, it's going to come back. It'll go away, but it'll come back. And when it comes back, you go through the same process again. But each time it goes away, it's gone a little longer. Each time it comes back with a little less power. And then I'll let Iris tell her story.
So obviously I was really fortunate to grow up in the program and doing these workshops. I know many of you online, you've heard this prayer before. I've seen it pop up everywhere now. And, we used to have an online meeting with the name and everything. But the first time I heard it was, over 10 years ago at this workshop we were doing. And at the time, I was 16 years old. I was struggling with the fact I had been raped by my cousin when I was 14. And this prayer worked. It worked. I don't know how it worked. I don't know why it worked. I just know that it worked. Funny thing, we were doing a workshop, a couple months ago. And I was telling the story, and it dawned on me at the time I was 16 at that workshop. And my biggest struggle was actually I was in an abusive relationship. Now, here I am about 10 years later, and I completely forgot that relationship existed. You know, I can't even remember his name. What a miracle. I don't remember it. Anyway, so this prayer, it worked. I don't have any flashbacks. I don't get upset. It never comes up. I will say a couple things. This is the spiritual solution. You know, in many cases, there may also be a therapeutic solution, a psychiatric solution, or even a legal solution. You know, but this is the spiritual solution. And for me, it has worked far better than anything else I've found. A couple things, too. You know, this stuff doesn't really come up for me anymore. I mean, I have other issues that like to reoccur, but that situation with my cousin and that boyfriend I completely forgot about, it doesn't come up. Except when I'm sitting at one of these workshops or I'm doing inventory with another person, sitting one-on-one, and they share that they've had an experience, and I get to tell them, you know what? Me too. And this is what I did. Me too. And this is how I healed. You know, now this terrible, awful, tragic event has some value. It's now one of the greatest gifts I have. I get to share it with other people and help people almost every single day with this experience. A couple other things. We are not saying that what the other person did was okay. We are not saying that at all. What we are saying is that we can be okay even though regardless of what they did. You know, the moment I began to forgive was the moment I stopped being a victim. You know, and I think forgiveness is also just this greatest form of detachment. It's like cutting this string. It's saying, you know, who he is or who they are, what they did is now between them and God. It has absolutely nothing to do with me, and I'm free from it. You know, so if you want to stop being a victim, this is your answer. This is your solution. And you don't have to do it. You don't have to like it. But I suggest if you want that freedom, this is what we do. And the way I do it is 30 times a day for 30 days. I usually do it first thing in the morning like a mantra. I just say it over and over. Bless them, change me. Bless them, change me. I have one sponsee who says she just does it in her morning shower. You know, and then whenever the name comes up, bless them, change me. Now, if this can work for something as big and tragic and traumatic as my experience, imagine what it can do for these little things, for this everyday stuff. And it absolutely works.
We started the eighth step with a quote that said, in order to recover, it's necessary to give up the hope for a better past. That's from Tom, the guy originally 12-stepped me. And I discovered Tom was half right. He's only half right, because you see what happens is when I do this work, the past changes. The details don't change, but the perception changes. And perception is everything. You know, something else we talked about in the eighth step. If it's 95% you and 5% me, when I take responsibility for my 5% and do something, okay, I have now become a co-creator in everything that follows. And I cannot be a co-creator and be a victim. I can't. Okay? This is precisely the point where we give up being victims and begin to take responsibility for our own lives. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. This is important. Yeah, I say if you get nothing else out of this whole workshop, please take that prayer. Just take that prayer and use it.
It absolutely saved my life. So please take it. And you don't necessarily have to start with their name. Oftentimes we start with bless that sick son of a bitch, change me. And that's a start. And usually by the end of the 30 days, I can say their name again. So our ninth step question is, will you make amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others? And you can type your answer in the chat. Everyone here?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Is everyone in chatting? Is everyone saying yes in the chat? Let's look at it.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I want to make sure they say yes first. All right. So we're going to test you on that. We are. There's a catch. We're going to test you on that. I want you to take that name on your inventory list, that first name. And I want you to put it into that prayer. And you can type it in the chat if you feel so comfortable. You can say it out loud. And we're going to do it 5 times.
Yeah, it hurts.
So bless.
Bless.
Bless blank. Change me. Bless.
My
change me. Bless. Change me.
Bless.
Bless. This is one of my favorite things online, is getting to see it typed in over and over. Congratulations to everyone for just doing your first spiritual amends. Give yourself a round of applause. Oh, and we have another song for you.
I just saw in the chat, bless something, that son of a bitch. That's okay. That's okay.
Which one?
It's a start.
Oh, bless that son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's a start. So I know many of you are all over the world on Zoom. If you've never been able to make it to a live workshop, I hope one day you can. We may have a lot of fun. We have bubbles. We have tambourines. We have pom-poms. We do dancing. I mean, And you don't necessarily need to come to St. Petersburg where we are in order to attend. We will give you all the materials and you can make your own workshop with your home group or district or whatever, you know. And it's great to have fun in recovery. Like I said, why would I do this if I couldn't have fun with it?
My friend James died in 2005. He was 100 years old, had 71 years in recovery. And James always said, we can live in the past and make excuses, or we can live in the present and make a difference. It's the ninth step that allows me to live in the present and make a difference.
And step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. From past to recovery.
Step 10 is the beginning of what some members refer to as the maintenance steps. Others call them the continuous growth steps. Step 10 is a daily commitment to continue this healing, life-affirming process. Members share that they can find three types of inventory useful: a spot check, a daily check-in, and a periodic long-term check. We may not catch every mistake as it occurs, but a daily check can help us become more adept at recognizing and changing our behavior. We can take a few minutes each evening to review the day for both positive and negative experiences. Some of us choose to make it a part of our end-of-day rituals, just like brushing our teeth. When we inventory our day, we admit our shortcomings to God, become ready, and then humbly ask God to remove them. We list the people we've harmed and make the appropriate amends. In taking our step 10 inventories, we are actually using all of the previous steps, remembering to treat ourselves with compassion and love. Continuing to take personal inventory keeps our slates clean and maintains our spiritual, emotional, and physical health to better deal with the rough times that occur in everyday life.
I like to liken the 10th step to doing the dishes. You know, if I let it go for a day or two, the dishes are going to start to pile up. If I let it go for a little longer than that, they're really going to pile up and get dirty and grimy. And, you know, I live in Florida, so we can get roaches pretty quickly. And then when I get to it, I get overwhelmed because I have so much cleaning to do. You know, but if I do a little bit every single day, you know, I don't have to worry about that. It all stays a little clean. It all stays clean. And again, there's so many different ways to do a 10-step inventory. My preferred way is by taking that fourth step inventory grid that we just used and just writing the days of the week at the top: Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then every day I can take a look at it and say, okay, where was I angry? Where was I obsessing, fearful? You know, where was I judging others? And at the same time, and this is where assets become most important, you know, we spend a lot of time beating ourselves up, but doing a 10-step gives me the opportunity to also look at, okay, where was I loving? In what areas was I content? You know, did I have to practice honesty today? How did that look? You know, where was I generous or humble? And it keeps my sink clean. It keeps my side clean every single day by doing that. It also mentions spot check inventories, and those are definitely the ones I do most often. One of the great things about online recovery is now I have 24/7 access to Al-Anons all over the world I can reach out to and say, hey, I need to do inventory right now. And I can text them or I can video call them and I can say, okay, this is the situation going on. Here's a brief overview. I'm angry. I'm obsessing. I'm fearful. I'm judging, blah, blah, blah. And then they can say, okay, what are you going to do now? And I can say, I'm going to go do my 7-step, 6 and 7. I'm going to go pray about it. And we can discuss amends right then and there. Okay, so you're angry at your kid right now. Maybe you should go in and apologize for yelling at her. That's come up quite a few times this past week. You know, so it, and it doesn't have to be this long, complicated, painful process. If you want it to be, that's fine. But here we can give you something simple. You have anything to add? So if you're ready, will you continue to take a personal inventory and when wrong, promptly admit it? And the answer is
yes.
That brings us to step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him or don't understand it, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out.
There are thousands of paths to a higher power, and we can choose any one of them. Gratefully, we choose at least one and step out on our continued journey to recovery. Prayer and meditation are the vehicles we use for spiritual communication. It has been said in many Al-Anon meeting rooms by wise members that prayer is talking to God, meditation is listening.
All right, so we're just going to go ahead and do a meditation practice. So I invite everyone to get a piece of paper and something to write with. You can use the back of your inventory sheet. You know, and as it said, you know, prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening. I love what one of my recovery friends shares, which is, you know, he realized, you know, he really hates his relationships where the other person just talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and never pauses to actually listen. And he said he realized he was doing that to his higher power. He was praying and praying and praying and talking and talking and talking, but he never took a moment to pause and actively listen to what his higher power might have to say. So we're going to take a moment or a few minutes to do that. And here are the directions. Very simply, we're going to get quiet and still. Ask God or your higher power to direct your thinking. And then write down everything that comes to you, every thought that comes. The 11th step suggests that we pray only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. The prayer I like to use is, where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say? And to whom? And I think that essentially covers my will in my life. And then I just sit and listen to what comes. So we're going to take a few minutes, and I'll let you know when we come back. All right, so bringing ourselves back. At this point, we like to ask if anyone would like to share what they wrote. And during this time, we ask that you share what you wrote and only what you wrote. And we do this for a number of reasons. It gives us the opportunity to read over what we put down and maybe test the thoughts. You know, is this a loving higher power thought, or is this maybe something else? Also, God tends to speak to us through others, and what someone might share may be guidance for someone else. And again, all we ask is that you share what you wrote. You don't have to share anything too personal or go into any explanations.
Write down what you hear.
And write down what you hear, if you hear anything you think may also be for you. And if you're on Zoom, you can type it in the chat, and I can, you know, I can see it at the moment and read it for you. Some other questions we like to ask at this point is if you maybe heard something from someone else you think may have also been for you without saying who you heard it from. Or did you have any other experiences, maybe physical sensations, visualizations, audio? Sometimes we hear things, see things, you know. I think one of the most common is like feeling like you're wrapped in a warm, fuzzy blanket. So thank you, everyone, for sharing. A couple things about this meditation. The meditation we did today is actually based on an old pamphlet. We don't usually share it during the workshop because it's not conference-approved literature, but it's an old Oxford Group pamphlet. And for those that don't know, the Oxford Groups came before AA. And Ann Smith, Dr. Bob's wife, was so dedicated to this pamphlet, she did it every morning with her family at the breakfast table. I attended an event where they talked about this history, and, you know, in some cases the family did not move until she had done her morning guidance and asked God for direction. It's also because of her dedication to that pamphlet that we have an 11-step in our 12-step programs. I learned that not too long ago. If you're interested in knowing more, you know, let us know and we can send you that information. Also online, the Let It Begin With Me Facebook group hosts two meetings, Wednesday morning and Sunday morning at 11 Eastern time, where we read through the pamphlet and practice this. Yes, two-way prayer. So if you're interested in that information, just let Tamar know. If you can find us on Facebook, you know, message us and we can get you added into that online meeting. And then if you want something more just Al-Anon focused, not specific to this, there's also a Tuesday meditation meeting that's just Al-Anon. We don't read the do this necessarily or the pamphlet. So a couple things about meditation. There is no wrong way to meditate. There isn't, you know. Meditation in the 11th step is really all about my personal, individual, unique relationship with the God of my understanding or lack of understanding. Johanna, who unfortunately wasn't here to be my co-chair, you know, she once said that meditation is just mindfully focusing on one task. And that task can be anything. You know, I can be doing the dishes and turn that into a meditation. And I turn it into an 11 step by asking my higher power to join me and talk to me. Another thing is I have another friend in recovery who teaches meditation to 5- and 6-year-olds. I have a 6-year-old. I know many of you and you have kids. You know, to me, I'm not great with kids. I can't imagine getting a group of them to sit down for more than 2 minutes. I think of it as like rounding up squirrels. But when asked, how do you teach meditation to 5- and 6-year-olds? And he says, it's really simple. I tell them to sit down, get quiet, and pretend to meditate. Sit down, get quiet, and pretend to meditate. And I think that's the perfect suggestion for people like us. We Al-Anons typically like to complicate things, but it's kind of like fake it till you make it. Just sit down and pretend you know what you're doing and see what happens.
If you know how to worry, you know how to meditate. So everyone here can meditate. You've been doing it for a long time. We're just going to turn it to something positive.
Stacy wrote, my sponsor says, faith it till you make it. Thanks, Stacy. So again, there's no wrong way to do this. If you need suggestions, you know, there's a couple meetings out there I just told you about. And again, congratulations on doing an 11-step. Give yourself a round of applause. Victory lap around the living room, kiss your dog. Step 11 question is, will you seek through prayer and meditation to improve your conscious contact with God as you understand him? Praying only for knowledge of his will for you and the power to carry that out. And the answer is
yes.
Yes. And on to step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I forgot to ask this earlier, but, you know, usually at the beginning of the workshops, we ask you to get in touch with how you're feeling, and then we check in later, you know. But looking at your meditation, had you have done this meditation at 10 a.m. this morning before we started, do you think it would have looked a little different? I know mine would have. I was very upset about the technology. You know, so do you think something might have happened here today as evidence in just the meditation that you wrote? Does this sound like something a bunch of just, you know, random people would come up with? Or do you think maybe there's something going on here?
There are answers.
So from how Al-Anon works,
this step implies that by working all of the steps, we will undergo a spiritual awakening. Although a spiritual awakening is a highly personal experience, many of us define it as a kind of transformation, a radical change in perception that occurs as a result of our taking the steps. Sometimes a spiritual awakening happens abruptly, in a flash of insight or the instantaneous removal of an obsession, and the whole world suddenly looks new. More commonly, though, we experience a gradual awakening of the spirit, a gentle metamorphosis in the way we see ourselves and others, a slow and subtle unfolding of our own inner beauty. Some of us actually feel reborn, hopeful, free of the fears and burdens that had previously prevented us from truly living. Thus, although our circumstances may not have changed, our lives improved dramatically, because we perceive them in a new and clearer way.
So now I'm going to ask everyone to please just take a moment, close your eyes, and really just get in tune with yourself. You know, see how you're feeling. Do you think maybe something happened for you here today? I know I'm feeling calmer, happier. You know, I want to go dancing. How's everyone else feeling? So keeping that in mind, you know, I want to point out that, you know, this is what happens when we work the steps. We have a spiritual awakening, and sometimes it's big and bright, and sometimes it's more gradual. But you guys know what you experienced here today by doing this work. You know, comparing yourself to how you feel now to this morning, hopefully you can see a difference. You know, I can see a difference with the people I see here. Online, it's a little harder. But, you know, hopefully you can feel this. You know, hopefully you experienced something here today. You know. Now, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. You're going to go to a meeting tomorrow or during the week, and you're going to tell someone, I just worked all 12 steps on Saturday during a four-hour workshop, and it was amazing. And they're going to say, you can't do that. It took me 6 years to even get to my fourth step, and you're telling me you did it in 4 hours with all the other steps? That's not possible. You know, oh, it wasn't WSO approved. It wasn't a real workshop. You know, it wasn't really Al-Anon. I can't tell you how many of these things I have heard over the years. You know, but you know what you experienced today. Don't let anyone steal your recovery. Don't let anyone take this away from you. And they will try. Not intentionally, not maliciously. It's just what they were taught. But they will. You know, trying to think what else to share. Oh, the other thing is, you know, we have ways to connect you with people who have been using this for a while and have experienced this through Facebook and, you know, in the local community. We have lots of people who are all for the workshops. But, you know, the steps were not meant to be this long, painful, difficult process. They were meant to be done quickly and often, quickly and often. And again, you know what you experienced. You know, don't let anyone take that away. You have anything to add? All right. So, from paths to recovery.
To keep it, we have to give it away. This is from a sponsee I have in Texas. He said it took him 3 years to figure it out. He called me one day, all upset. He says, that 12 step is a trick. He says, it's your way of getting me to take the steps over and over again. Because every time I take someone through the steps, I take me with them. He's absolutely right. He figured it out. It is important, however, to remember that the message we carry is the result of working all the steps and applying them to every aspect of our lives. When we first came to Al-Anon, many of us wanted to carry the message to others before taking even the first step ourselves. Others use this part of the 12th step to justify their efforts to push the alcoholic into a treatment program. But in time, as we work the steps, we realize that we cannot carry a message we have not learned for ourselves. We share our experience, strength, and hope, offer love and acceptance, and then let go.
There's our direction. It's pretty simple, right? I don't have to tell anyone where to live, what to do, whether or not they should leave their spouse or kick their kids out. I don't have to give any of that advice. All I have to do is share my experience, strength, and hope. That's it.
And you are here today, so you now have experience.
You know, and all we did today was we read the literature and shared our experience. That's it.
And followed the directions.
And followed the directions. You know, so for those that say that, you know, this is an Al-Anon, you know, what's more Al-Anon than reading literature and just sharing experience? That's all we did today. So our chief obligation to the newcomer is an adequate presentation of the program.
Keep coming back is not an adequate presentation.
All right, so we used to end the workshop at this point, but then people would ask, well, what do we do now? You know, I feel pretty good. I just did all this stuff. Now what? So we came up with some 12-step suggestions. The first, we show an interest in them. Now, I know what happens. You know, we get a newcomer at our meeting. We hand them a welcome packet. We say, welcome, you know, keep coming back. Then at the end of the meeting, we go off and talk to our friends, and the newcomer just kind of gets ignored and wanders off. You know, so show an interest in them. You know, it's not complicated. Just say, hi, how are you? You know, what brings you here? This is what brought me here. And for many of us, it's been so long since we'd ever talked to anyone. We're dying to really talk to someone, and it's not complicated. Get their phone number. You know, I don't know about you, but when I first came into the rooms, I was dealing with PTSD, chronic anxiety, agoraphobia. Every time my phone rang, I threw it across the room. I'd usually answer it a little bit later or text back, but I could not pick up the phone and answer, or I couldn't pick up the phone and make a phone call. You know, it was hard enough to answer, but get their phone number. You know, I don't know where we got the idea that the one who's sickest needs to be the one to reach out. It was hard enough to get my butt in the chair at the meeting each week, let alone make a phone call. Now, if you called me, I'd freak out and throw the phone, but I'd usually get back. So, and it's not hard. I just asked, do you want my phone number? They pretty much always say yes. And I say, great, what's yours? And I put their phone number into mine and I text them, and then that's it. And then I check up on them. You know, I don't have to stalk them. You know, I message them during the week. Hey, how are you? Have you been to any meetings? You know, want to get some coffee? You know, hey, I'm doing this workshop on Saturday. Want to come join me? I know that there's a handful of you here who got introduced that quickly.
Do you think if somebody had done that for you after your first meeting, the course of your recovery might have been a little different?
Yeah.
If somebody had called you after your first meeting, how you doing? You want to get a cup of coffee?
And assume they want help. How do we know they want help? They showed up. I got my butt in the chair, and now you want me to call or take home this workbook and answer 500 questions? No, I showed up. That was the most I could do, but I still needed help. You know, and thankfully, you know, I had enough recovery people around who were willing to actually reach out. I met my sponsor while I was in the psych ward. She came and visited me because, well, my dad's in recovery and was sponsoring her at the time. But he told her to come visit me, and she did. you know, a stranger. I hadn't known her. I hadn't lived here for very long, but she came and met me. And she brought one of her sponsees who knew the entire staff at the psych ward because she'd been there so many times, you know, and that was it. It was just that simple show up, be present with someone. So assume they want help. Use your sponsor. I said it earlier, the most important places I need a sponsor is in the ninth step when I'm talking about amends and in the 12th step. You know, with my sponsees, they've never sponsored anyone before. I expect them to come to me and ask questions or even ask me to sit down with them and work with their new sponsee. You know, use your sponsor. I'm sorry. That's it. That's what I got there. Use the literature and the step study. Like I said, all we did was read the literature to you and follow the directions. And we have made this so simple. Like I said, we have a Facebook page on there. You can find the slideshow. You can find, you know, the handouts. You can even find the music. Or if you want, you can find the videos from past recordings, turn it on, and listen to it with someone. I had a sponsee do that not too long ago with her new sponsees. They sat down, they watched the videos on Facebook, listened to me share my experience and Johanna, who was recorded. They paused it occasionally and shared their own experience, and they just followed it. We have made this so simple.
My sponsee in Texas, when we do a workshop, he was putting it on his TV in his living room and inviting a half a dozen people over for a watch party. So next time we do a workshop, have a watch party.
You know, and you can take this with you and make it your own. Please, please take the slideshow. Use whatever songs work for you. I know some of you are in completely different countries and maybe have better songs that relate in your language. You know, take it. Use it with your home group. Work with the willing and be encouraging. You know, obviously we can't force anyone to recover. You know, but if someone is willing, if they show up, you know, it's okay. I work with them without question. Pray and meditate. I can't do this without a connection with my higher power. I mean, that was the whole goal. That was the whole point. You know, I need to be in contact with my higher power. And when I'm working with someone and I get stuck, this is one of the most important places where I can ask for guidance. Okay, what can I do here? You know, the other thing is now I have this gaggle of sponsees and recovery friends that have experience in areas that I might not, that I can connect people with.
Gaggle?
A gaggle. You don't need to be their sponsor to be helpful. You know, a lot of people I work steps with, I don't technically sponsor. You know, and tell them what you're saying.
Most of the people that I work with, I do not sponsor. I just look for the people in meetings that look like they're struggling or they have their heads down or and you know, and I grab them after the meeting. So you want to go get a cup of coffee? And you know, and then we sit down to say, you got a few minutes? And I've got the workshop on my phone. And if they're gonna, you know, if they got a few minutes, we'll order something to eat, and I'll pull up the workshop on my phone. And by the time we get dessert, we've done the first three steps. So the question I get most often when I do this is, if I do steps with you, what am I gonna tell my sponsor? And I tell them, you can make amends to your sponsor when she gets you to the ninth step in 3 years. In between, let's see if we can get you some relief and get you feeling better.
And, you know, they say that recovery is not a race. Like, you know, you don't, you know, take your time. It's not a race. You don't have to do it too quickly. You know, but for me, you know, and I know my experience may differ from a lot of people's, but I was so desperate and so miserable. You know, for me, I was in the psych ward after a suicide attempt. You think I had time to wait? You think it wasn't a race? I needed to get enough relief and recovery in me before I, you know, had the next attempt or before I called him for another, you know, 4-hour argument, you know. So it's not necessarily a race is how fast we can do this stuff, but it is a race and how fast I can get relief and save myself from more suffering.
It is a race, but it's not a competition.
Yes. If you don't hear the solution, bring it. You know, and you're going to go to a lot of meetings now and you're going to hear things, you know, that just, they just don't sound right. You know, you want to tell them?
They make stuff up around here. Did you know that? They just make it up. Ever hear anybody say I'm powerless over people, places, and things?
It is in the literature here, though.
Not exactly. Yeah, I mean, that may or may not be true, but it really isn't part of the program. And there's a whole lot of other things like that. They may or may not be true, but they really aren't part of our program.
You know, I've been to a lot of meetings, and if you haven't had this experience, I apologize. But, you know, we sit down and someone asks, you know, does anyone have a topic? And then you hear someone over here say, well, my cat died. You know, and then we spend the whole meeting, you know, everyone can relate to that. You know, my dad had a cat. I'm sure Lori has a dog, you know, and we've all lost pets. And now we're talking about, you know, this someone's cat died. And later on in the meeting, we find out that the cat died about 10 years ago. We're mourning the anniversary of Fluffy's death. And meanwhile, we have a newcomer sitting in the corner, sobbing, crying, not sure how she's going to make it through the night because she's suffering. Maybe she's black and blue, you know, and we've just spent our entire precious meeting time talking about a cat. And then, because, you know, no one talks to her afterwards, what do you think happens?
There is a place for that. Denny's after the meeting.
You know, so if you don't hear the solution, bring it, and it doesn't have to be complicated. One of the easiest ways is just to pull up the slideshow and say, I want to talk about this step. You know, how did everyone do their fourth step? It's a great way to see some eyes roll during the meeting. Don't ever, ever, ever give up on anyone. Get them started on the steps immediately. There may only be a small window of opportunity. Do you remember how desperate you were when you first came in? Just willing to do anything that we told you. You know, and we squander that by just saying, keep coming back. Take your time. You want to share your Pam story? And put no barrier between the newcomer and the 12th step. If the solution is a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, why would we make you wait for it? Why would we say that you can't have it? You know, and now you have that experience, and now you have the opportunity to share it with others.
Yeah. Why would we tell you have to answer 69 questions before we can get started? My friend Larry used to say I got three divorces. I'm in the middle of a bankruptcy and nobody will speak to me. And you want me to answer 69 questions to see if I can get in your club? Yeah, don't have time for that.
How do we take the steps? Quickly and often. Quickly and often. You know, and I actually got asked, you know, you're just telling people that they can work the steps in 4 hours and they're done. No, we give you a way to work the steps and we say, keep doing it over and over and over again. You know, get together with your sharing partner and finish your inventory. Grab a newcomer and work the steps with them. You get to do that with them. And after all, who benefits the most during the sponsorship exchange? It's not the sponsee. It's not the newcomer. It's me. I sponsor because it helps me. You know, I assume most of my sponsees are doing pretty well. I know a handful of them are here online, but it helps me. This is what works. This is where the real miracle starts to happen.
When we work with others, we get better.
So our 12-step question, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps.
Today,
will you carry this message to others and practice these principles in all your affairs? And the answer is?
Yes.
Congratulations for working all 12 steps. And again, you're not done. There's more to do. So I know that we're running a little over time. We also started late, but we have one more song before we go. Oh, before that, we have the 12-step promise. You know, put your hand on your heart, hand on the keyboard or in the air. I will get a newcomer's phone number and contact them this week. I can't see the chat. All right, so there's our information. We're on Facebook. That has everything that you could ever want. As far as everything you need. Again, you can reach out and connect with other people who are using this. And we need all of you. This isn't the end. This is just the beginning. Let it begin with us. Let's close with the Serenity Prayer and the Al-Anon Declaration. God, Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And let it begin with me. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, let the hands of Al-Anon and Alateen always be there, and let it begin with me. Keep coming back. It works if you work it one day at a time. God bless, and you're worth it.
Thank you.